This will be a tape recording of a talk given by Herman Lee of Los Angeles, California. This talk was given at the second annual Kingsburg Mini Conference held in Kingsburg, California on Saturday, October the 24th in 1987. This tape was produced in the spirit of AA's 12th step to carry this message, and members of the fellowship should bear in mind AA's tradition number 11 regarding anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films in their use of this tape.
It says hole in the ground group. I'm sure that there are other people as ignorant as I am in here that wonder what that's about or what that, and I hope that you might make mention of that in your talk.
Thank you. And though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of, for necessity is laid upon me. Yes, woe is me if I preach not the gospel. My name's Herman, and I'm a real alcoholic. And I'm thankful and grateful to be here today, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to share with you. And the hole in the ground is in Huntington Park, California, which is just east, on the east side of L.A. I don't know how else to tell you. about 20 miles north of Long Beach, I guess, since we do precise locating around here. I don't know. Yeah, when I got the letter to come down here, wasn't no letter, just a map with a telephone number, you know. And I kept looking. I turned the letter inside out, and wasn't anything else in there but a motel reservation, and the motel reservation was for the 25th October, you know. And I said, hell, I got to be in Long Beach on the 25th. I don't know why they got me a room for that night. And so I had to call the motel and get it changed to today. And then they had a flyer in there for Kingsburg High School. And I said, looked like they would have told me where it is or something. You know? I just said, I go to Kingsburg, you know, and I got to Kingsburg, and I said, I looked at my tank, it was about half full, and I said, I better gas up, I said, because I don't know where the high school is, you know. So I pulled into the filling station, and when I got out, I stood up and looked, and that was Kingsburg High School, right across the street from the filling station, you know. It's been a real nice experience. I was talking with Bill, and he was asking, hell, they like to ship us away, and then they tried to wash us away this week. I don't know. Look like I better move to Kingsburg or somewhere. I don't know. We had our problems down on the south end. And I certainly would like to thank Margie and the committee for asking me to share with you. In case I don't get around to it later, I'd like to do that now. And to let her know that I found it. Maybe had a little problem, but I found it. I didn't hit chapter 3. I love it. You know, chapter 3, because I know we got some new people in here, and how the hell are they going to cue something and don't know what they got, you see? Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he's bodily and mentally different than his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control. But such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse and never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drink out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. And then it get good. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe that they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will prove themselves exceptions to the rule. Therefore, non-alcoholic. But if anyone who is showing an inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Because heaven knows we've tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. And then they had to know that. And here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only and limiting the number of drinks and never drinking at home and never having it in the house and drinking only at home and switching from scotch to brandy and drinking only natural wines and agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job and taking a trip and not taking a trip and swearing off forever with and without a solemn oath, taking no physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitments to asylum, and had the nerve to add, and we could increase this list ad infinitum. Now I can increase that list and don't even think about it, you know. People think you just get sponsors when you get the AA. I had sponsors a long time before I got here, but they were sponsoring me to drink, you see. And they would come up to me and they would say, "Man, you sure got drunk last night, but I know what was wrong. You didn't eat." What you need to do is to go to the House of Dying. They make the best chili in town. Get you a bowl of that chili and line your stomach, and you can drink all night and you won't get drunk, you know. Sounds like a good idea to me. I'm going out tonight to do a little social drinking, so I rush down to the House of Dines and I get me a bowl of this chili and I go out and do a little social drinking. And the next morning, I'm drunk and sick, you see. So you got to report back to your sponsor. You have to tell him, "Man, that chili shit don't work. It made me sick. Made me sick in hell last night. I ain't gonna never drink, eat no more chili when I'm going out to drink." And then they tell you, "Boy, you must be in worse shape than we thought you was." Say, "What you need is some butter." Say, "You know that butter they sell by the pound and they cut it into four sticks? Get you a pack of that and stick it in your refrigerator. And when you're going out to drink, eat a stick." I can tell you today that's some nasty shit without some bread, you know. But you want a drink. You want a drink. So you buy you some butter and you stick it in your refrigerator. And you're going out tonight to do a little social drinking, so you grab a stick and you eat it down. And you do a little social drinking, and the next morning, you're drunk and sick again, you see. And you got to report back to him, and you tell him, man, that butter shit don't work either. Made me sick in hell last night. I ain't going to never eat no more butter when I'm going out to drink. Then they lay it on you. And if there's anybody in this room who think you ever have to take another drink in your life, don't let them put that olive oil shit on you, you know. Talk about man, in the South Pacific, they drink that olive oil and they dance all night and they never get drunk. Get you some olive oil. Sound like a good idea to me. And I rush out and I buy me a bottle of olive oil and I stick it up on the shelf. And the night I'm going out to do a little social drinking, and I take that olive oil down and I drink it. And the next morning, I'm crawling to the bathroom. And I got olive oil shooting out of the hole I got, you know what I mean? And I'm saying, they knew it was going to do me like this too, you know. I don't care what anyone told us to do that would help us to drink. How crazy it sounded didn't matter. If they told us to do it, we did it. You see, because we wanted to drink. At all costs, we wanted to drink. You see? And we were looking for a solution. And anything they told us sounded good. Because we wanted to drink. And we tried it. No matter how crazy it was, we tried it. Buy you a steak about 2 inches thick. Have your wife to cook it. Don't let her cook it done. Just let her turn it over lightly and eat it. And lay down and sleep for 2 hours. What alcoholic can sleep for 2 hours thinking about going to drink? That's what I want to know. Well, you tried because you want to do it. You see, my prayer was never, Lord, Lord, don't let me drink tonight. That was never my prayer. My prayer was, oh, Lord. Don't let me get so drunk tonight, you see. I wanted to drink, but I didn't want to get so drunk. I wanted to be like them guys. You see them, you walk in a party, and they leaning on the wall with a glass in their hand, and they looking cool. And you walk in there, and you see them, and your head says, God damn, he's cool. And you walk over to the bar, take one drink, and you happen to turn around and look over there, and you see him. You say, look at that square motherfucker standing on the wall. One minute he's cool, the next minute he's a square. What's the difference? A drink is the difference. You see, I used to think alcoholics had to get drunk before that psychic change would take place. But I changed my mind, just give him a drink, you know. Just give him a drink. I'm fairly convinced today that alcoholic brain is very closely related to rice. Because if you take a little rice and put it in a pot and add some water and heat, after a while, that rice is so big, it's about to bust out that pot. And if you take a little bitty idea and put it on the alcoholic's brain, and I used to think you had bad alcohol, you know. But just put that idea up there and leave it for a while, you know. And that thing gets so big, it's about to bust your head off, you know. And I remember one day I had one of them ideas. You know, I just thought it was a passing thought. I was scared of my children. I was chicken shit. I was scared to say anything to them because they wouldn't love me if I said anything to them, you know. And I used to come home from work, and that damn woman, there he go again. He's drinking again. Make me mad in hell. Heifer don't do nothing but sit on a fat ass all day. Looking at TV. I got to go out there and work. And I come home. I want to take me a drink. She start her shit. There he go again. He's drinking again. And when she ain't there, got them three girls, and they followed me around track to track. And time their mama hit that door, they running up to her reporting, "Mama, he done had one." And I was scared to say anything to them, but I could look at them and hate them. And I just looked at them and hate them. And I don't know how many of you like I am, but this head talks to me. And it ain't bad that this head talks to me. The bad part is that I believe it, you see. And I would be looking at them, hating them. And this head would say, "Look at the little bitches. They telling the big bitch." I wonder what they think she can do about it. I'm the boss of this goddamn house. Ain't nobody working here but me. That's the trouble. I'm too good to them. I give them too much. And over again, I made the same mistake, never making any connection between the problems I'm having and the alcohol I'm drinking. It's always something else. You see, it wasn't my fault. That fat ass woman, that's her fault. Didn't fuck with me so much I wouldn't have to drink. It's the police fault. They know where I live. Parking on my goddamn street. And time I start home. Got me again. God damn. Ought to be out somewhere catching criminals instead of fucking with me. It's the judge's fault. Everybody in that line had the same charge I had. DUI. Charging them. 125. Get to me. 375. Some bitch must know where I work. It's my boss's fault. Always want me to do somebody else's work. I got enough work to do on my own. It's Gene's fault. It's Bill's fault. It's Ed's fault. It's his fault. It's her fault. It's everybody's fault but mine. And today, I have discovered the enemy. And the enemy is me. You see, I have discovered the enemy. And the enemy is me. And long as I keep my eye on that enemy, I'm going to be all right. I got to keep my eye on the enemy. You see, I can't worry about who you came to the meeting with or what you had on when you got here. You see, because that ain't my business. And I can't worry about where you're going when you leave here, because that ain't my business. My business is to help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. That's my business, you see, and that's all my business. We got some psychologists around here and some doctors and all that kinds of bullshit. us just sitting out here, we got marriage counselors and we can solve all your problems that you having, but we ain't got no wife, you know. I'm gonna solve your problems that you having domestically, and I ain't got nobody. You see, I can tell you what you should do at work, but I ain't got no job. You see, we got all these kind of people. You have to beware of them and watch them. You see, their only purpose here is to help another alcoholic to achieve sobriety. All that other stuff you have to take care of on your own. Sometimes we can give assistance in these areas, but that ain't our function. You see, the thing that we know most about is us. And what I can share with you is my experience, strength, and hope. In the hope that you will never have to take another drink in your life if you don't want to. One day at a time. We got a saying around AA that you can't hear till you can hear, and you can't see until you can see. And just in case there's someone here today that's ready to hear, or someone here today that's ready to see, I would like, where's that clock? Oh, shit, I can't see. Just in case there's someone here today that's ready to see, ready to hear, I would like to share with you some of the things that were shared with me when I was ready to hear and when I was ready to see. Now, bring me your glasses and then I can see you. I heard them tell me that I wasn't a bad guy, thank you, trying to get good, that I was a sick guy trying to get well. But man, I was suffering from a disease, and that disease was called alcoholism. And it wasn't like any disease I ever had before, ever likely to have again, because it was a disease of a threefold nature. It was an allergy of the body, obsession of the mind, and a spiritual malady. And they told me that when I strayed out spiritually, that the mental and physical part would follow, and never before. And they didn't leave me there. They told me that the disease of alcoholism could be compared to a train ride. And when I first sat on that train, I was seated comfortable, enjoying the scenery and enjoying the ride. But the longer I sat on that train, the tighter my ass became and the more miserable that ride became. And that's the way it was with our drinking, that we all could look back on our drinking career and we could remember a time that we enjoyed it. But there would come a day in our drinking career when alcohol would stop doing it for us and it would start doing it to us. And once it started doing it to us, it wasn't going to get any better, because this is a progressive disease from which I suffer, and it always gets progressively worse and never better. And they didn't leave me there. They told me that I didn't have to ride that train to the end of the line unless I wanted to, that I could get off at any stopping place. And I was at a stopping place now, because I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I never had to take another drink in my life if I didn't want to, one day at a time. And they gave me this big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and they told me to go home and read it, because if I was drinking and having problems in drinking, I would find my answers in that book, Alcoholics Anonymous. and they told me to start where it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And the purpose of this book is to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered. And that's what they do in that book. They show us precisely how they recovered. And if we want to recover, we got to do as close to precisely what they did as we possibly can. My sponsor told me, boy, it don't take much to make this program, but it takes all you got. And some days, that's what it takes, all I got. Because no alcoholic want to change. We come in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and get dry for 90 days and get hip. And we stick our hands in our pockets and we lean on the wall. And somebody come by and say, boy, you got a shitty attitude and that's got to change. Who? Me change? Why should I change? I've been this way for 20 years. Tell me, why should I change? Because you've been drunk for 20 years. That's why you should change. And my book tells me that we will never know sobriety until a psychic change occurs in our lives. And when I read that, I said, psychic change? What the hell are they talking about? I don't know nothing about no psychic change. Well, I guess I better see what they did. And if I can do what they did, maybe something will happen in my life too. And I read, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders. But many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. What the hell are they talking about? I'm honest. I went to work today and we took in $10 million and I didn't steal now. Ain't got shit to do with this program. The type of honesty we're talking about in here, if you get up and go back there and use that bathroom and you come back in here, sit down smiling, don't nobody know if you wash your hands or not but you. And that's the type of honesty it takes to make this program. You got to look deep inside yourself. And you got to ask yourself some questions. Like, what is alcohol doing for me? Then you got to ask yourself, what is alcohol doing to me? And if you get the answer that I got, that it's to kick your butt and you don't want no more of it, then I would suggest that you continue to come to these meetings and listen with an open mind as you can muster. Because if you're drinking and having problems, or having problems and drinking, we got a solution. And that's why we're here today, to share that solution with you. To let you know that you never have to take another drink in your life if you don't want to. One day at a time. And it begins with, we learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. And until you do that, you're just pissing against the wind. Yeah, ain't nothing going to happen in your life. Everything you put out is going to blow right back on you, you see. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. And until you do that, You see, it ain't gonna work. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supported through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. That's all we are about, you see. But the first step is we learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step of recovery. And that don't mean standing at this podium talking about, my name's Herman and I'm a real alcoholic, and in the back of your mind saying, bullshit, I ain't one of these people. You've got to concede to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. This is the first step of recovery. And it gets easy from there on in. That's the hardest part. The admission to your innermost self that you're an alcoholic. That's the hard part. After then, everything is easy. You see, I've been here a little while, and I ain't seen nobody rush in the door yet say, hey, I'm an alcoholic. Take me, do with me what you want to. Just help me. I ain't seen that. I seen them that my wife thought I was having a little problem, so she suggested that I come down here. I've seen them that my husband thought I was having a little problem, so he suggested that I come. My boss thought I was having a little problem, and I've seen them that the judge thought I was having a little problem, and he suggested that I come down here. You see, I've seen them come in here all kinds of ways. I seen some come in here, thought they were in a PTA meeting, you know. But everybody that gets the Alcoholics Anonymous is supposed to be here. I don't care how you got here. If you came with a friend, you see, I've seen a lot of them get here that way. Come with a friend. I came to help him out. We get here by all avenues. It doesn't matter how we get here. What matters is if we stay here. That's what matters. You see, this is a life and death proposition. There may be some of you out there that say, I don't belong here. I don't know. But let me tell you this. If you're in this room, you're supposed to be here. You're supposed to be here. You see, you're supposed to hear what you hear today. And I ain't in charge of it. I used to think I was, you know. I was the fix-it man. That's what I used to tell my kids. Your daddy is the fix-it man. I will fix it or fuck it. And when I can't fix it, two tears in a bucket and fuck it. And that was my attitude. That was my attitude. And I want you to know that today I can't fix anything. I can't fix anybody. I can only become willing to have God fix me. You see, we learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. And you see, I think every newcomer coming through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous should be handed a big pad and a pencil and tell them, write. Hey, I don't know what to write. I'm scared. Tell them, write your life story. All of us coming here, we're going to sell it at MGM anyway and get rich, you know. Because we are unique and different. Tell them to write your life story. You see. And then, and let them write it. And when they get through, let them read it to you. And then tear it out and throw it away and say, Now that we got the bullshit out the way, we can get down to causes and conditions. So that's what the books say. We had to get down to causes and conditions. And when I got here, I didn't know a cause from a condition, you see. And I had to sit here long enough and give myself a chance to clear before I could get down to the problems at hand. You see, we had to get down to causes and conditions. And when you first get here, you don't know nothing. And the best thing you can do is sit here and dry out until you're able to get down to causes and conditions. We learn that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. You see, we didn't come here alcoholics. I didn't. I didn't even come here to quit drinking. I came here to do something about my drinking. I don't know what I came to do, but it damn sure wasn't to quit, you see. I did not come here to quit. My wife had took my children and run away with them and wouldn't tell me where they were, and she told me to do something about my drinking, and she would talk to me. And I was going to do something. And when I caught that bitch, I was going to kill her. You see? That's the idea that I came to this program with. And I haven't had a drink since I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that ain't the miracle that I haven't had a drink. The miracle is I have wanted a drink. Because I told you already, I'm chicken shit. And if that pain hit me today like it used to, it's a big difference in needing a drink and wanting a drink. Wanting a drink ain't nothing. You can put that aside. I want a drink. Oh, that's all right. I'll wait a while. Wanting a drink ain't nothing. But needing a drink is a bit. You see? I remember one day I came home and I needed a drink. And my wife didn't know I needed it. And I didn't know I needed it. I just thought I wanted it. Because she had told me if I take a drink, she was going to leave me. I came home. And I needed a drink. And I said, honey, can I have a drink? I said, I don't want but one. That's all I want. And she said, no, Lee, I told you. If you take a drink, I'm going to leave you. So I walked around the house and I looked in at the kitchen and the sink was full of dishes. And I said, I got in there and I washed them dishes and I washed the stove off and the refrigerator and I said, honey, come see what I did. And she came in there and she said, I don't believe it. Thank you, honey. And gave me a kiss. I didn't want no kiss, I wanted a drink, you know. And I said, honey, can I have a drink now? I don't want one. She said, no, Lee, I told you, if you take a drink, I'm going to leave you. And I don't know how many of you like me, but I got something down in there. When I need a drink, it just tightens up and it just bends me over. It just tears me up inside. And that thing grabbed me and I bend over a little more. And I walked around there talking to myself, and I walked out to the front porch, and I looked at the lawn. She'd been begging me to cut that lawn for weeks. So I rushed around to the garage, and then I got the mower, and I cut that lawn. And I cut it down, and I trimmed the hedges, and I said, honey, come see what I did. And she came out there, and she said, I don't believe it. No, this ain't true. And then she kissed me on the jaw. I didn't want no kiss. I wanted a drink. And I said, honey, can I have one now? I don't want one. That's all I take, please. Let me have one. And she said, no, Lee, I told you, if you take a drink, I'm going to leave you. And I didn't want that woman to go nowhere. And I walked around there. And I stood it as long as I could. And finally, I looked up. And I said, bitch, I'll kiss your ass and give you $50 to help you on the way, but I'm going to get me a drink. Because I needed it, and I had to have it. And I took that drink, and she left. You see? But I had to have that drink. And When you drink to the point that you have to have it, you probably have gone too far. And no human power can relieve us of our alcoholism. But God could and would if He were sought. You see, that's the answer. I don't know what the problem is, but God is the answer. And if there's anybody in this room today that's not ready for God, you better get your ass in gear. Because that's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. To introduce you to a power that's greater than yourself. When I reached the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, the lack of power was my dilemma. I didn't have the power to say no to the first drink. I was a social drinker. You say, I think I'll have a drink. And I said, so should I. And that's as close as I ever came to being a social drinker. And since I didn't have no power, it was necessary for me to become connected to a power that would give me the power under any conditions, in any circumstances, to say, no, thank you, I ain't drinking today. And that's what I got when I applied the first 5 steps to my life, to the best of my ability. And that's what the book told me. It told me that this is the triumphant arch through which we walk to freedom. You see, those first 5 steps are the triumphant arch through which we walk to freedom. And that, you see, that's why you hand them a big pad when they walk in the door, because ain't no newcomer going to take them first 3 steps. You can forget about it. The first step says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Ain't nobody drinking liquor, just getting over drinking liquor, going to admit he's powerless over anything and ain't going to let nobody manage his life. Step one is out. Everybody in train, hold up your hand. Oh, you're coming up kind of slow out there. If you want a newcomer to take that step, ain't no newcomer going to admit he's insane. You see, step two is out. Step three, the same reason. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Ain't no newcomer going to turn his life, will of his life over to the care of nobody, including God. You see, that's why the first 3 steps are out the window, hand him the book, let him write. If he's writing, he can't drink, you see. And maybe, just maybe, he'll stay here long enough that his head will have a chance to clear. And he can look back on his drinking career. And if anybody else did to me what I did to me, if anybody else did to me what I did to me, I would kill him. But I didn't want to quit. I didn't come here to quit. I don't think any of us did. A lot of us came here to rest, you know, and get our shit together. And we stayed here long enough that happened. And then we discovered we had a big pile of shit. Here, we get rid of it. That's what we have to do. We have to sweep it away. We have to sweep it away. And how do we do that? With the 4 steps, which we gave them a pad, now we write it, now we tell it to another human being, now we get rid of it. And the 5th step will set us free. Not only will it set us free, it will introduce us to a power that's greater than ourselves. And no human power can relieve us of our alcoholism. So we have to have a power that's greater than ourselves. Me, I choose to call that power God. God works when nothing else works. God works, you see. But this is a 12-step program. This ain't no 5-step program. And I read back in Bill's story, chapter 1, where it says, some of our fellowship drink again. And we wonder why. We don't know, but we believe it's because they fail to enlarge their spiritual life. You mean getting to know this guy isn't enough? I got to develop a relationship with him. That's where step 11 comes in. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for the knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. You see. But between 5 and 11 is four more steps. You see, four more that are very important. Because that sixth one says, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And that seventh one said, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And sometimes you're going to be around a meeting and a newcomer is going to come up to you and say, I want to ask you a question. Tell them, yeah. I just want to know if this is a defect of character, or if it's a shortcoming, and if it should be worked in the sixth step or the seventh step. Tell them bullshit. Because that's what they're trying to do to you. What does it matter if it's a defect of character or a shortcoming? It's something that's wrong, and it's something that something should be done about. You see? Tell them God don't care which one they use. Just do it. You see? And that eighth step says, we made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And the ninth step says, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. And this is a step that much caution should be exercised before we go out and attempt a ninth step. You see, my book tells me that even people who are experienced in spiritual matters always insist on checking their ideas with another human being. And me, being inexperienced, I'd better make sure that I check my idea. I'm subject to make all kinds of mistakes under the guise that it's direction from God. You see, I come in here and get 90 days out, I get dressed up, and I go walking down the street. I am sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I came to make my amends. And Bill, I've been going with your wife for 25 years, and you see, somebody gonna get hurt. And that's what they mean. Unless it will injure them or others. Them others is me, you see. I can't do anything that's gonna hurt you to set me free. But by that same token, I should do nothing that's gonna injure me to set me free. I need to talk with somebody about these things before I go out and attempt to make an amends. But if I should do it, there are some definite things that will happen in my life. And the way they put it in the book, they say, if we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. And we will not regret the past. I wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. And no matter how far down the scales we have gone, we will see how our experiences can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us, and we will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we will work for them. And how do we work? We go to the hospitals with the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We go to the jails with the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We go to the prisons with the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We go to Skid Row with the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And above all, we work with newcomers. How did this thing get started? One drunk talking to another. And I got the peculiar idea, if it's going to continue, it will be one drunk talking to another. I heard a guy say one night in the meeting, when Dr. Bob and Bill had the first meeting, they invited God to come along. And he liked it so much he ain't missed the meeting since, you see. It kind of lets me know what's going on in this room, you see. I don't care how bad you were feeling when you got here, you feel better now. And I don't care how good you were feeling when you got here, you feel better now. And that's enough. That's enough to let you know that something's going on in here. And maybe, just maybe, I better stay long enough to find out what it is. That 10th step says, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And all that means is that when the day is done, you kind of look over that day and see if there's somebody you should call, someone that you offended during the day, somebody hurt. That's all. Just check the day. If it is, call them up. I'll give them a, and let them know you're sorry. You made a mistake. And you'll try not to let it happen again. And you can turn out the light and go to sleep. But if you look over that day and say, that son of a bitch, I hate him, I ain't going to tell him nothing, and then you may have to keep Cal Worthington and his dog Spot a little company that night, you see. Because you can't sleep, you see. You got to clean the slate. And that's what that 10th step means. We continued to take personal inventory. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. We have to do it promptly. It will grow and it will fester into resentment. And resentment for our number one offender. It killed more alcoholics than any other reason. Resentment. And above all, we must be rid of resentment. And we talked about, and that 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. All of them. All our affairs. You see, that don't mean here in this meeting, everybody in here trying to practice them for an hour and a half. That means when you hit that door, we don't need them in here. We need them out there. And when we go to work tomorrow morning and he ain't doing it our way, we don't call him what we want to call him, you know. We just say, God bless him, and we go ahead and we do the best we can. And when we get up on the freeway and that son of a bitch cut us off, we don't call him that either. We say, God bless him, and we go ahead. And we allow him the right to be right and the right to be wrong. And when we go to the supermarket and they got a long line in there and we're in a hurry, and we finally get back through from the cashier and start smiling because we're going to get out of here. And that's when this little lady turned out this bag of pennies that you got to count one by one, you see. We don't call her what we want either. We say, God bless her. We wait our turn, and we go through the line. And my sponsor said, boy, this is a program of growth. Either we grow in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, or we will go back to the bricks, and we'll drink again. And thus we grow. And so can you. Though you be but one man with this book in your hand, we believe and hope it contains all you will need to begin. We know what you're thinking. You're saying to yourself, I'm jittery and alone. I couldn't do that, but you can. You forget that you have just now tapped a source of power much greater than yourself. And to duplicate with such backing what we have accomplished is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. Still, you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is always upon Him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. I'd like to thank Margie for inviting me down to share with you, and to thank each of you for being here to share with me. During the Vietnamese War, the students at Berkeley had a slogan, suppose they gave a war and no one came. And I like to think about this meeting like that. Suppose we had this meeting and no one came. Anyone here that's new might look in and say, this thing don't work. Ain't nobody here. And go back and drink himself to death, never having enjoyed the information that you and I now enjoy, to know that he never has to take another drink in his life if he don't want to, one day at a time. And in closing, I would like to leave with you a little prayer that's helped me a lot. Maybe it'll help you. I stole it from a lady, and if I heard her use it tonight, I would say, hey, she's using my prayer, you see. And she simply said, thank you, God, for all you have given me. Thank you, God, for all you've taken away. But thank you, God, for what you left me. Keep coming back.